around Alaska, that you must have been to a lot of villages around Alaska.
Yes, I did go to quite a few villages. Not all of them, but almost all of them. And some of them many times. I met a lot of noble people. People who, if they met you 10 years or 15 years later, they knew you and remembered you. It's a good feeling to know that you have friends. Raised up in hard times, in poverty, I could appreciate the poverty situations in the rural areas. It might have been one of the reasons that they accepted me and I accepted them as I did. But I remember them fondly, many of them.
And did you obviously went to villages in the interior because of the gardening project. Did you travel in, to other villages around Alaska?
I went to St. Lawrence Island and visited in Nome some. I went just traveling. I went down on the Kenai Peninsula. And I flew out to an island off the coast north of Bristol Bay and brought back some artifactual materials that are fairly recent. But there would be times when Dr. Scarlin or someone would say, could you go to such and such a place and furnish me transportation to go and look for what they thought was there. So I tugged in a bunch of stuff. Otto Geis brought back this a lot of materials from St. Lawrence Island, Savunga.
And now, why were you on St. Lawrence Island?
I'll have to think of a reason. I was involved with the anthropology department at that time, and I went to more or less map and get a sort of an aerial perspective of the excavating that was being done. The rules back then regarding antiquities was much, much laxer than now. In fact, it was almost non-existent. You went somewhere and you dug up stuff and brought it back, analyzed it. But it was quite an adventure, as Savunga was. Never got to gamble.
You know, getting out to St. Lawrence Island is not an easy place to get to.
No. It's always a Cessna involved somewhere.
And I know, having traveled in the villages, it's not always easy as a non-native person to go into a native community. How did you handle that situation?
Well, it varied from very cordial relations to hostile. Hostility was generally associated with alcohol. And it's just something you had to work around. Ignore it as best you could. Leave early, maybe. But you couldn't always control when you left or when you arrived, even for that matter. Mm-hmm. But it has been, on one occasion I remember, we flew into this village and taxied over to a place to park the plane, and men came running out, and the pilot was very experienced, and he says, "We gotta go." And these men were all beat up. They had bloody heads and black eyes, and they'd been fighting. He says, "We gotta get out of here." He wheeled the plane around and took off. We didn't wait till they got to us.
Yeah.
Because the propeller could have been a danger. He explained to me that they'd just come in from firefighting and they'd already chartered a plane load of booze into the village, and they were wanting to charter this one to go get some more booze.
Because after summer firefighting jobs, they had money.
So,
sad.
This was not a pleasant thing.
No. Well,
it didn't often happen, but I saw enough to know that it existed. So I made it a policy of not going to a village where they'd just come back from firefighting.
Right. Well, and also in the 60s, I'm thinking that living conditions in some of those villages must have been very difficult. They didn't have the money that's around now.
I carried a sleeping bag, and I've slept in all kind of sheds and lean-tos and such.
And did you stay with families?
Sometimes. Very cordial atmosphere. I have literally hidden myself in shacks when the town was drunk. So that was not pleasant.
But there was good too. You had good times as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Most of my encounters were very pleasant. And I guess one of the things I liked was these were rural people. And I was raised up rural.
So you could relate to each other?
Yes.
Okay.
Sometimes reality can seem real crude. I remember something had happened in the South. A man's wife died quite young. He had a 7-year-old boy. He'd hitched up the wagon, and the neighbors had come over, and they were gathered in his yard. They had his wife's casket in the wagon, and he and his boy on the seat of the wagon. And he tells the boy they were to go about 2 miles to a cemetery. And he tells his boy, "Go get the cola can since we're going." And that's reality. Poignant.
Mm-hmm.
Since we're going.
Great. Well, shall we talk about your art? Are you ready to talk about that?
Yeah. I always like to talk about my art.
Well, you had said before you started painting in the 1940s after you came back from being in the military.
Yes, I did. Yes. And I have some upstairs that I can show you.
Okay.
One of them has a lamp in it. I seldom use objects as models, but I painted this lamp on a table. And this is the coal oil lamp, or as you would say, kerosene lamp, that I used to study in my last year of high school. I did my last year. We didn't have REA, rural electrification. We got it some 10 years later, but we didn't have it when I graduated in 1939. So one of my paintings has that lamp in it.
Why did you start painting? Do you remember?
I'm not sure. Hard to defend that. I had a sister who was quite talented, and I guess there was a couple of men came by, door-to-door salesmen selling art courses, and they were called a famous art course. And they enrolled me as a commercial artist. And I did a few of the things that were called lessons, very basic things. And I had a facility for it that I was sort of a discovery for me. And so I just took to doing it on my own. So I think that's how I got into it, so to speak.
Well, you said you were doing illustrations and cartography, so you must have had some innate artistic inclination or talent or something.
Now, when I was first at school, I went 2.5 years to college.
Before
then
the
I enrolled in the Army.
Right.
And then when I came back, I worked 10 years in industry. And then I went back to school and studied through my graduate degrees. So there was...
But you must have had some innate artistic talent because you used it in various ways.
Well,
whether it was illustration or...
I used it in graduate school when the Navy financed this Coastal Studies Institute. I was called in to draw aerial photos or to take aerial photos and draw pen and ink drawings of the things that I saw.
Right.
So I learned to interpret aerial photos, and then I got into making maps to go in different books, drawing different house types, and storage bins for corn in certain parts of Mexico. And I did illustrated Cuban houses. I can remember these offhand.
Well,
I did maps to put in books.
In terms of your artwork and your painting, what is it about it that is so pleasurable for you?
It's a way of expressing, I think I'm painting geography, and I'm just now sort of realizing that I paint a dust bowl or an old abandoned service station. That's something that tells me a story. And by painting that, I'm painting my feelings, I guess, of things that are happening. And though I seldom use human figures, human figures are in the background.
Well, you have that one next to you there that you said you were working on, and you have a poem you're working on with it. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, this is a painting I did, and I was looking through a magazine and saw a painting almost identical. Then I realized that the painting that was in the magazine had been painted 10 years earlier, and I didn't know about it until after I'd painted this. It was sort of uncanny.
Great minds think alike, I guess.
And this guy was from Minnesota, as I recall. But at any rate, this is not finished. It's in this area that I'm going to put the family plot, as personal cemeteries were often dubbed. Mm-hmm. And for some of my paintings, I write little things that go along with them. And this regards this as a cemetery or family plot. Out of the hot sun on a hill you lie, out of the winds that pass you by, to await the rapture in patient silence. That sort of tells it.
And now, in this painting, we'll use it as an example. Is that a place you've actually seen that you're painting, or
no,
this is all from your imagination?
This is from my imagination, but what worries me is it was so similar to a painting a guy had done 10 years before that I'd never seen until I'd painted this. And I guess there's so many ways to paint stuff.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I'll walk around and look at some of the paintings close up, but many of the paintings in your house, they look like real places. Like this one behind you, is that an actual location?
That, in my own imagination, that is the Chena River in the fall. That was done with acrylics in a little under an hour.
Wow, that whole painting in under an
hour?
Wow.
Acrylics dry real fast, which can be an advantage or a disadvantage, but I had pretty well determined I was going to paint this within an hour, and it probably not finished yet.
So there are places that maybe you've seen, or in some cases like that, it's a place you know, but you're painting it as you're visualizing it.
I visualize my paintings. I see them before I paint them, sort of. Mm-hmm. They don't always come out like I visualize them in the first instance, but many of them are connected with man some way.
Well, I notice a lot of landscape kind of paintings.
But I don't put people in them. Mm-mm. I don't know why.
Well,
stick figures are easy to draw.
I was thinking, too, about you visualizing. You're not doing plein air painting where you go take all your supplies and go stand out next to the river and paint what you see.
I've done some of that, but I paint sketches like that, but then I bring them to the studio and finish them. Mm-hmm. And generally, in many cases, much, much larger. Mm-hmm.
And some people take photographs and then paint from a photograph. Have you done that?
In rare instances, I don't do very well in painting from a photograph. There's a little square photograph above that painting.
Oh, yeah.
That sort of moved me emotionally. But the painting, as it turned out, was quite a bit different.
So there's the... Can you tell me about that painting?
This was a painting of an old abandoned service station in West Texas. And what struck me first and foremost was this "Independent" written on the side of the building. In those days, you had company stations like Standard Oil, and you had a connection with the Standard Oil, and you sold only their products. And there were some people who wanted to set up what we call filling station. It couldn't get a contract with one of the big companies, oil companies, so they set up as independent. I was sort of glorying in that independence, but he's not independent anymore. He's gone. The service station is what we call our filling stations. They aired your tires up. They filled your radiator with water and wiped your windshield and pumped up gas by hand into these cylinders. Mm-hmm. And it flowed into your tank by gravity. But I arranged those things differently from a little photograph that I took. And then my imagination took over.
Yeah, so the photograph on the shelf above is sort of was your...
That's what I saw that started my mind racing.
Right. Well, you probably saw plenty of filling stations similar to that in your lifetime, so you could kind of picture it and pull it up together from different memories into a whole new composite.
And I don't know how I planned all this. It just came along. There's the rural electrification that was in, there's this old style pump. There's this awesome cloud formation of the sky. Now I wonder, the land formation would be U.S. Geodetic Survey of sections, townships, quarter sections, and aliquot parts. What would be in the store? I look at this painting and I wonder, what would I find if I stepped into that old store and saw what was in there on the shelves? What did they sell?
Say Coca-Cola in glass bottles.
In glass bottles, and you brought the bottle back. You could get a penny sometimes. Mm-hmm. They had Vic Salve. Vapor rug, Vicks vapor rug, rub. They had tire patching. Tiger brand, maybe. They had flour and lard. And a few grocers. They had oil.
Cigarettes. They sold you. Cigarettes?
Cigarettes, tobacco mostly.
Tobacco.
Bugler tobacco, they had that. They had Bull Durham in a sack. And they also had Duke's mixture in a sack.
Okay.
had cigarette papers. They had hoes and rakes, gardening tools. Lord knows what all they had in there.
Chewing gum?
Chewing gum.
Candy?
Yeah, everybody chewed gum.
Mm-hmm. Maybe some Hershey's chocolate bars for the kids? I don't know.
But I'd thought about using this painting in front of students. Let them look at that and ask them to write a paper about what they saw and wonder how many could pick up on the time, location, the electricity, the obvious flat land, and the visibility of the wires over their head, the broken window.
That's neat to think about how you can use a painting in that way.
I wondered if I've never done that, but people learn from paintings. So I might try that sometime.
Yeah. And you've continued to paint all these years just as a hobby.
Yeah. And there's been hiatuses where I didn't paint for several years. And I've thrown away a lot of paintings that I probably should have. Thrown away some I might should have kept. Don't know. But I've just sort of kept my paintings because I wanted them. I wanted to see what I had done. I would paint something and turn it to the wall and 4 or 5 years later turn it out and look at it. And I have a habit of sort of staring at my paintings. Wondering why did I make that mess? And I see something worthwhile in some of them and others that but I've thrown away a lot of paintings.
Well, sometimes do you go back and change it?
Yes, I do that. And most of the times it doesn't improve. My family just tell me that it takes two people to do a painting, one to paint it and one to tell him to quit. So.
But with acrylic, you can do that? You can go back and...
Yeah, over and over, yeah. And that's one of the nice things about acrylics. If you don't like what you put on there, 5 minutes later you can paint over it. But I still favor oils, so everything that I paint with, they've just got more of a soul to them than acrylics.
So you do paint in oil?
Yes. Uh-huh. And I do watercolors as well. And I still try once in a while a little pen and ink stuff, but I'm too shaky now for that.
Uh-huh. Well, has your style changed through all these years?
I think so. Some of those paintings over there were done spontaneously, and I look at them as not knowing any better than to do them that way. And I've saved them, I think, mostly because the frames are nice.
Well, I say they look quite impressionistic.
They were pretty well intended that way. I had begun to study the Impressionist, and I have a few paintings scattered about. My sister has a couple that I'd like to have them back to look at, but she's enjoying them, and she's 97 years old. And
she's not going to give them back.
I'm not going to get them back.
So why have you continued to paint? Even now, you're still painting.
Well, it's sort of painful in a way because I shake an awful lot, but I can still do smallish things. There's one just there, that...
That one in the frame there?
Yeah, the little metal frame on it. Now that one...
You can hold that one for the camera.
This one I titled Up the Stees. At the bottom of the painting you can see the edge of the roadway. Mm-hmm. And this is something you'd see over and over and over going up the Stees. And I think people who've been up the Stees many times or several times would accept that title that I hung on it.
Yeah.
Up the Stees.
Up the Stees Highway. Yeah, I mean, you could have been standing on the side of the road painting, and it looks like so many places along the roadway. Yeah, it's beautiful. That one looks like it's that kind of pastel crayon thing.
No, it's all acrylic.
It's all acrylic.
But it's acrylic used as watercolor.
Oh, that's why it's different from
the
other one.
You can use acrylics as impasto.
I think that's what I'm thinking of. I don't have the art term.
You can water it down and it makes a nice watercolor. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the purity of colors that fine watercolors have. But it's something you can paint a background on, and 10 minutes later you can paint over it and put what you want on it. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to worry about it floating back up. It doesn't. It's there forever.
Versus watercolor, it kind of floats around.
Yeah, you have to be careful how you work watercolors. If you learn really well how to handle watercolors, you can make some very beautiful pictures. Mm-hmm. If you use good watercolors, which are very expensive.
Well, I say, you know, your art must be meaningful to you because you do keep doing it, even though you say you're 94 and you can't seem to stop.
Well,
so that means something.
It's a release for me. And my neighbor made me a thing to fit on my walker where I can put it up in front of me and do watercolors or small acrylics, whatever. For a period, I went through miniatures.
Oh, right.
Where I did little watercolor landscapes, mm-hmm. 4x6 or 5x7s or 8x10s.
That seems harder to me than doing something big, because you have to be so detailed.
Yeah, it one little stroke can ruin one of those, too. So you can paint over and correct and so forth. And that's part of the joy of painting, is salvaging your painting. You may realize that that's not going to work, that's not right. And you've got to go back and figure out a way to fix it. So that's part of the mechanics of painting.
That's interesting, because I think, I'm not a painter. I would think, oh, it doesn't work, you throw it away and you start over again.
I do a lot of that, but if you work to correct something, you learn. And then you throw it away.
Well, did you have your own studio then here at your house?
Yes, I do.
And you just do it in your kitchen?
The upstairs, I have some paintings around there on the dining room wall. Mm-hmm. And if you could take
I'll
the camera
around.
And...
Yeah. But your studio upstairs...
Yes, I'd like to show you that.
Yeah.
We can take that movie camera.
Before we do that, I want to turn around in this picture behind me.
Sure.
I think you probably want to tell me about that, don't you? Your Dust Bowl picture?
Herbert?
Yeah.
Can you turn this picture?
No, I can get it on the camera.
I was going to turn a light on above it.
Oh, okay.
Herbert?
Yeah, I'm here.
You turn the light on up there for me?
Okay.
Go ahead. You can walk by. Okay, so this is your Dust Bowl picture.
Yeah.
You want to tell me about that?
I was never in a Dust Bowl. My wife lived amongst them. As I said earlier, she was unable to get to her graduation ceremonies because of a Dust Bowl storm. And she described them to me, and then I saw a program on the TV of how they rolled in rapidly. And these are particles of dirt.
Mm-hmm.
They go under the doors and through the windows. They infiltrate the house. And they they get into the lungs of people. They had a dust pneumonia, they called it, where young folks, because of their tenderness, could actually expire because of dust particles in their lungs. So there was a real downside to it. It ruined many people.
Well, I think it's neat that you sort of paint that for your wife then?
I painted it because of the way she had talked to me about them.
Yeah.
And the farm there is made up, I imagined it. There's a silo over there, and the house has already been covered with dust. A few outbuildings and a barn are still visible. I call this Dust Bowl Noon, and so the sun is shining in this front half of the painting, straight down and bright, whereas the background is dismal and dark, gritty. The clouds are, I call them clouds, just rolling. They just roll across the countryside, as my wife said. They move quite fast, 10 or 15 miles an hour, sometimes faster. But it isn't a sandstorm, it's a dirt storm.
Right.
Yep. And this could be used as an educational tool to intrigue students to learn about this Dust Bowl and how it was mishandled in the beginning.
Yep. So you want to... Well, let's go upstairs and see what you have up there. I'm going to put this on pause.
To see whether that's working. It appears to be working. It's another one.
This is all hardened over 50 years.
Wow. That's all your palette, all your paints, huh?
You find that around the old studios.
Well, it's very nice having you sitting here with all your brushes and paintings around you. And
this is some of my brush collection.
It's a very nice studio with all the nice windows.
That's a miniature.
That's very miniature. But it looks like spruce trees in the wintertime.
Yeah, it's not very good.
So you want to talk about some of the pictures that are up here?
Yeah. And this one is down at the crossing at Delta.
The ice one?
Big Delta.
Uh-huh.
That one, and there's one on the easel over there.
This one right here?
One on the easel over there.
Uh-huh.
right in front of you.
This one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's formative. It's not finished.
And what is it about?
It's not finished.
Do you know what it's going to be?
It's going to be like that somewhat.
Mm-hmm. The ice on Big Delta River?
Yeah. I was going to make this one into a freeze-up painting.
Uh-huh.
Instead of a break-up painting.
That's good. What about this big one on the wall behind you?
This one?
That abstracty one.
That is a... From my youth, I saw what we call a butcher bird, a French mocker, a shrike. They catch lizards and little frogs and hang them on barbed wire or thorns. And that's what they eat. They're carnivorous. They're still a dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
That struck me as painful and strident, and that's what I wound up painting.
Mm-hmm.
But if the subject matter had to be named, that would have been it. And I called it Thornbird.
Most of your other paintings are happier scenes.
Well, you're
not.
And they're, yeah.
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 That's one of your painful ones.
Yeah.
Well, this one here, right down here, that's very bright and colorful.
Yeah, that's an abstraction that I did, and I won't bother to explain it. It has no explanation. Abstraction to me must have a tiny bit of reality in it. And the reality I see in it dimly is faint outline of trees over there.
Oh yeah, I can see that. I almost...
This could be the framework or the cockpit of a small plane.
Mm-hmm.
I could put a few rivets around in there and make it just a little bit realistic.
That part in the far left corner, I almost see a little bit of Aurora Borealis in there. What about this big one behind you on the easel?
It's nothing.
It's nothing?
I just assume you left it out of it.
Okay.
Can I ask
about this one against the window that looks three-dimensional?
That is a three-dimensional thing. That was an exercise. The only paint in there is the sky and the road. The rest of it is birch bark.
That's very cool. And that's the only one you've done like that?
That's the only one I've done like that, yeah.
Huh. That's very neat.
Those three paintings over in the corner over there are different times of the day in the desert.
So, which is which?
Well, high noon is on top, and it gets later in the day, I think.
That looks, the middle one looks almost a little sunset-y.
The bottom one is the evening time.
Yeah. Nice. This one here in the window is quite vibrant in its colors. Here, I'll bring it over to you.
I don't think that one's finished either. Let me see what I'm looking at here.
Yeah.
Oh, this isn't finished.
It's another not finished one?
That's another not finished. Okay. There for now.
And now we're back
on the floor.
On the floor. That's a Louisiana swamp.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like sort of mangrove trees.
Those are cypress trees.
Cypress trees. Nice. Well, you certainly have a lot of paintings up here in your studio. Whether they're finished or not.
Here's some of my paintings that I bought from Italy.
Never have used them.
Oh, they're paints, yeah.
Yeah.
It's oil paints?
It's acrylics.
Oh, more acrylics.
There's a French easel here.
Mm-hmm.
And here's another one of those. Seem fascinated with that.
And what about this big one on the wall? The trees in the hillside, this one?
I just lit in the painting there. There's a painting somewhere that I don't see.
What does it look like?
It was a river I made up, no particular river. It's during breakup.
Well, it definitely looks like what a river looks like during breakup. So your imagination got it right. That looks like the Alaska Range at sunset, the mountains.
Yeah.
There's one in the back. Okay, say that again. It's a triptych?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what's it of?
It's just interior highlands. Like.
Yeah.
So tell me about, this is a forest fire?
Yes. And I titled that The Bogmen March on an Oxidizing Plain. And those objects moving across here are not really trees.
What are they?
Bog men.
Oh. Well, that's true. After forest fire, it does create some interesting shapes. And this picture here, this is you on the...
Gene Lester did that.
That's a nice picture of you.
Can you come closer?
Yep.
Or no?
Yep.
I'm make
right
it
here. Okay. Go ahead.
It's your main fire over in here.
Uh-huh.
This is a second, this is a former generation here. And these were moving this way. The smoke from that goes up and over and disappears. I've seen it do that from forest fires.
Mm-hmm. Neat. Okay. So this is a watercolor in 1949, huh? Wow. Very modern.
Back in the living room. After our expedition, and yeah. Hopefully won't make somebody watching it seasick, because my camera work is all over the place. But that last painting that's at the stairs here, you said was a watercolor you did in 1949?
Yeah.
It's quite abstract. It looks like a...
Braque.
Braque. Was that what you were aiming for?
I was studying Braque, I think, about that time, or something in my mind, and...
Mm-hmm.
It was it's done with Winsor Newton watercolors on a crescent board. And I've had some good comments about it. And I've exhibited it in Louisiana and here.
Well, and the fact you still have it from 1949, that says something.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of exhibitions, that's what I wanted to ask you. Have you ever had a show or shown any of your pieces?
No, not. I've exhibited my paintings sometimes. One time I put a bunch of my paintings early on in a fancy restaurant. Three Coins and a Fountain was the name of the restaurant.
Here in Fairbanks?
No.
Oh.
In Baton Rouge. And I left them in there for about a year, I guess, and then I went and got them and scrubbed the grease off of them. But I never had. I have exhibited in Louisiana. I was at one time president of the Louisiana Art and Artist Guild. I forgot to mention that. Mm-hmm. It's still existing. And I decided that the guild ought to do something. And there was a tuberculosis sanatorium at Greenwell Springs. And they used to quarantine you with tuberculosis, and that was it. And I noticed that they didn't have any paintings on the old gray walls, and it just was bad. And so I cajoled my guild into signing a donation slip of an oil painting by a certain date. And if I remember right, we collected 47 paintings.
Wow.
Some were real good, some were not so good, but they were something to go on the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And that I felt like that the guild had done something useful.
Mm-hmm. You've not ever wanted to have a show? And
well,
you seem to like to keep the art to yourself more.
I guess I'm sort of sensitive about it. And I've kept my paintings because I wanted to learn from them. Some of them I thought might be worthwhile. Not too many.
Yeah.
But I've kept them partly for my own progress.
Yeah, you haven't gone out and sold paintings. Hmm? You don't sell them to people.
Oh, no. I've given a lot away. Dr. Zamber saved my eyesight, and so I gave him a couple of paintings.
Nice. I know many of your friends have them and cherish them greatly.
Well, they prejudiced. No, I haven't. No, as far as just wanting to sell my work, I had a friend who painted primitive. And she was as good at or better than Grandma Moses. Mm-hmm. She was good. Primitive painter.
Mm-hmm.
And I was painting some abstract things at the time. This was in Louisiana. And she was taking a CYO art class with me at the Catholic Youth Organization. And she said she was going to paint an abstract. And the next time she brought an abstract, it was a little quilting. It wasn't an abstract. She could paint primitive wonderfully well. And everybody warned her, don't try any more abstracts. And she just didn't have a feeling for it.
Well, I'd say you definitely have a feeling for it. You're good at
painting. I hope so.
You're very nice. So, shall we sum up somehow?
Well, yes, I guess. People have probably heard enough about me.
So,
you
have a message in life you'd like to
read? Yes, I would like to say, while I have this opportunity, that I daily am thoughtful of the earth and its people, and pretty much worry about the mess we've made of our little planet. We're beginning to realize now that this is our home. I don't think people thought that way 50 years ago. But I think we're beginning to realize this is our home. And we can't step off onto another one. We've about run out of options. So since this is our home, we'd best do all we can to learn about it. And geography should be very, very important in understanding the world and what we can do with it realistically. Sustainability, something that won't wreck everything else. The unintended consequences. That's a thing that's been happening since the beginning. You can watch the world civilization as they moved. Mm-hmm. But you can't stay on top of the world forever, so to speak. You've got to learn about it to use it wisely. And it's very important that people begin to study seriously our home. Mm-hmm. Only one we got.
Is there any hope for us, you think?
Oh, yes.
Is it too late?
Oh, yes. But I'm firmly of the belief that there are tipping points where it would be irretrievable. And it might not take that much change in one area to bring about a big change all over the world.
Mm-hmm. So are we at that tipping point?
No, not yet. The Earth has a tremendous ability to recover itself. But the Earth really don't give a tinker's damn about man. It didn't hang on to the dinosaurs. It didn't hang on to a lot of mammals and fishes and such. And so as far as Mother Earth's concerned, she don't really care about us. Although in fables we might like to think that. But we could become extinct. It could be a outbreak of something that we simply could not handle. But we've stayed ahead of it so far. Mm-hmm. I thank the Lord for this day. And all I can do now in my prayers is just to thank you, Lord.
Well, you've been very fortunate to be on this planet for a very long time.
Indeed. Very fortunate.
All right. Anything else? We're done. Thank you very much.